This is episode 4 of my Quest for Healing podcast series. This episode is called Overcome Stress and Anxiety, using the 5-step process for healing wisdom and empowerment. My name is Phil Golding, and I am a self-awareness, meditation, mindfulness teacher, author, and podcaster. But most importantly, in regards to these Quest for Healing podcasts, I'm a psychotherapist with 25 years of experience as a therapist. Before embarking on extensive studies in depth psychology and transpersonal psychology and a career as a therapist, I was on my own journey of healing my own mind from chronic depression and PTSD, which I consider as my most important path of learning. Naturally, these issues involved a lot of stress and anxiety. I began my healing journey at the age of 24. That was 40 years ago at the time of this podcast. I have continued an open-ended path of healing and growing as a central part of my ongoing life. In my psychotherapy practice, I specialize in treating trauma and PTSD, depression, stress, and anxiety, and many other related issues. I also teach self-awareness to an advanced level. In my previous podcasts, particularly my Real Healing, Real Awakening series and my 5 Steps to Freedom series, I have described the fundamental principles that awaken and guide the wonderful potential of our own conscious awareness, which is what we use to heal our minds. As well as listening to this podcast, I would suggest that you listen to the first episode of this Quest for Healing series entitled You Have What It Takes to Heal, which is the introduction to this series. It is essential to understand that you are dealing with the human mind here, the most powerful and complex thing on the face of this planet, apart from your conscious awareness, which you first have to learn how to access and awaken. Chasing the quick fix is not a successful approach to healing, and more often than not leads to disappointment. Yes, we can have epiphanies and breakthroughs, but they are made more likely by getting on with learning how to be the real guardian of your own mind. Plus, those breakthroughs can be wasted if you don't know how to make the most of them. Also, when approaching any process for the purpose of healing your mind, you are trying to approach that process through the fog of your present mind's conditioning, which at first limits your comprehension. There is 40 years of experience of deep healing and awakening in these podcasts, so they need to be studied and put into practice and studied again, so you can put them into practice more effectively, and so on. It is a process of awakening leading to healing, leading to more awakening, leading to more healing. This is how we all learn and grow. Grasping at the quick fix is a symptom of our childhood conditioning, thinking things should happen magically, because our life was controlled by others back then, and we weren't mentored enough in the art of taking care of our own minds. We don't realize that the real magic comes from the power of our own higher awareness. Committing to learning how to be our own guardian is hard for that child within us. But unless we do make that commitment and stick to it, our life will not be our own. What you can do here by getting into these podcasts is learn how to do this healing and growing more effectively, more efficiently. So let's get on with overcoming stress and anxiety. Stress is a chronic issue in our modern society, along with anxiety, which could be regarded as a more acute and complex form of stress. All through time, there have always been pressures, be it war, famine, social expectations, disease, but being isolated from everywhere but your local community most of the time certainly would have had its advantages, along with living a much simpler life with far fewer expectations. Now we live a life that is connected to the world and is also driven by material consumerism. Everything is in our face, and we live under the weight of so many expectations, the weight of competition for everything, be it education, affording a home, finding a partner, getting a decent job, and on it goes. In our age of consumerism, enough is never enough. We get caught up in so many beliefs about what we think we should or shouldn't do or have. We think that our economy must keep growing, or we must have the newest and greatest piece of technology, bigger and better homes, that we must have an investment portfolio, or we will fall behind. We think we have to keep up with fashion, or we must have the right body, and on it goes. Every time period in history has had its challenges, and we certainly grow and evolve in the face of challenges. But in order to process those experiences so we can grow through them, we need downtime. We need to know how to stop and let all the parts of ourself, especially the vulnerabilities within our mind, to catch up. If we don't get enough of a break, if we are stuck too much in the busies, chronic stress becomes a factor, and we are in danger of burning out psychologically and breaking down physically. If we are carrying emotional trauma, negative self-defeating conditioning, then the likelihood of buckling under the constant pressure is even greater. We get caught up in this stress treadmill because we become driven by beliefs, most of which have sunk below our conscious awareness, that don't serve us. They are not for your highest good. And they lead us to think that we have no choice. But this is never the case. Overcoming stress and anxiety is a process of identifying those misbeliefs, as I like to call them, and knowing how to change them to what is generally going to work for you. Chronic stress is one of the most significant contributors to a wide range of health issues because the body is not designed to stay stuck in that psychological state of fight or flight, even if it's only a low-level fight or flight. The state of fight or flight significantly alters the body's metabolism, shifting it into a short-term survival mode by devoting the body's resources to cater to possible imminent danger, such as altering the way your blood flows so you're less likely to bleed so much if you are injured. Your immune system becomes impaired because the body needs those resources channeled elsewhere to serve the short-term survival. Your digestion and hunger cravings change, making you want more high-energy foods like sugar and fat in order to sustain a needed fight-or-flight response. Your awareness becomes more tunnel-visioned, more hyper-vigilant to perceive danger. All these things are important to help you act and survive in a fight-or-flight situation. The body can tolerate those changes temporarily, but the body certainly cannot tolerate being in a survival mode for extended periods of time. It is not designed for that. Not only that, having your mind stuck in a tunnel vision, hyper-aggressive mode is clearly not going to be good for conducting sustainable relationships of any sort, nor will you have the necessary awareness to process everyday problems effectively and constructively. Your fight or flight mind is more likely to see a small issue that is easily dealt with when open and calm as some sort of crisis, therefore being prone to overreacting. Therefore, being stuck in stress and anxiety is clearly not going to give you the life that you want. So how to get off the stress and anxiety treadmill? I have described many of these things in our modern societies that contribute to stress and anxiety, but as I have already hinted, they are not actually the cause of stress and anxiety. They are experiences of life that our minds struggle to process and manage effectively. The actual cause of the stress and anxiety is how our minds deal with the experiences. I speak a lot about this in my other podcasts, but I will address this dynamic here in a way that is more specific to anxiety and stress. If you place a random group of people, one by one, into the same challenging set of circumstances, they will respond or react to those circumstances in different ways. Sometimes subtly different, sometimes dramatically different. One person may get angry and upset, while another person may find it funny and play with the situation. It is not the circumstances that determine how the individual relates to the event. It is the disposition of the individual, controlled by the beliefs that have become part of our unconscious conditioning. This reality has been shown in countless studies for as long as modern psychology has been in existence, not to mention all the ancient wisdom teachings. As I have pointed out in my other podcasts, this actually simplifies things greatly. Ultimately, suffering is a mind problem. That doesn't mean that we let go of trying to improve the world around us. But unless we learn how to take care of our own minds as a foundational priority, we are likely to remain a part of the problems of the world rather than being a part of the solution. So instead of getting caught up with trying to make the world behave according to our expectations, which consists of trying to control a million factors that we actually have no control over, particularly when we are stuck in a state of stress, we just have to focus on ourselves, our own individual mind, which is a captive audience. However, wherever you go, your mind goes with you, so you don't have to go far to get to the root of the problem. It is just basically a matter of looking in the mirror. Simple as that, right? Well, no, not really. Because as strange as it may seem, one of the things in this world we know the least about is our own minds. We can isolate the problem to where we can see that our mind is the source of the problem, but then we are faced with not knowing how to deal with our own mind. We are used to looking out at the world from our mind, taking for granted the ways our minds tell us to perceive the world, but we are not very practiced at turning around and looking into our own minds. When we try, it's a case of the mind trying to look at itself through its own conditioning, not knowing how to have any other perspective to observe itself from. For example, if you have a tendency to judge others, you are liable to also judge yourself when you are looking in the mirror. Or instead of looking into the mirror, your mind gets busy denying responsibility for its problematic thinking and looks for somebody else to blame it on while justifying its self-defeating reactions. Or the mind has little to no conscious awareness of the fact that it is causing its own suffering in the first place. So trying to look at ourselves does tend to get a bit complicated to the point where it all seems too hard and we give up. Fortunately, despite the fact that we are all so different, in some very fundamentally important ways, we are also all the same. It is in this sameness that we find the formula that enables us to be able to effectively work on our own minds. In the first episodes of my Five Steps to Freedom podcast series and my Real Healing, Real Awakening series, I have introduced and laid out my version of this formula, which is the foundation of all other podcasts, and also my counseling, therapy work, and mindfulness coaching. So it's a good idea to check out those podcasts, but I will explore that formula for taking care of and mastering your mind here again. Before I do that, let's start with a very important question, which is, why are some of us able to effectively manage a situation and even make it work for us, while others of us find the same situation stressful and even traumatic? Here are some common factors that make all the difference. The first factor is control. One of the most common causes of stress and anxiety is being confused about what we can and can't control. One thing we definitely can't control is the future, and yet we indulge in worry. We ruminate about things in the future that we have no control over. Our mind, in its confusion, thinks that thinking is a form of doing, but in reality, stressing and worrying over the future is like running on a treadmill, thinking that this is going to take you somewhere, when in reality, you are burning up a lot of energy going nowhere. Worrying about the future has no positive effect on the future. Worse still, when you are occupied with trying to control the future that you have no control over, you are not dealing effectively with the present moment, ensuring that you're not going to have a positive future. Paradoxically, when you focus on taking care of the present moment, you end up placing yourself in a better position for tomorrow. So here is revealed one of the secrets to overcoming stress. The only point of control is in the present moment. The only time we can act on anything is now. We can make plans for the future, have future goals, do lots of research as a process of achieving those goals, but we are doing all that in the present moment. We cannot act on tomorrow. We can make plans, but we cannot control the outcome other than staying present with and taking care of each moment as we make our way toward that goal, one day at a time. In the same way, we can't control the past, but our minds still try to when we stress ourselves with regret, guilt, resentment, etc. So being aware of what you can and can't control is essential for overcoming stress. What you can control, you can work with. What you can't control, you simply must let it go. Otherwise, your mind will tear itself apart trying to control what it can't control. What you can do with the past is learn from it, and in the process, help yourself to feel much better about the past. I will talk more about that later in the podcast. So what do we actually need to take care of in each moment? About 10 to 20% of what we need to take care of and manage are things around us, such as appropriate boundaries, learning good communication skills, etc. But the other 80 to 90% is about caring for and managing the confusions within our own minds. In other words, the more you master your mind, the more you are the master of your life, because you are learning to be in control of the ways you perceive the moment, the meanings you place onto that moment, which determines how you are going to react or respond to that moment. This can mean the difference between having an all-out argument with someone, rejecting and resenting them from that time on, compared to being able to take the time to listen to that person, acknowledging their needs, resulting in them being more open to hearing you. The change of how you approach that moment could instead result in a lifelong friendship, or at the very least, a constructive working relationship. This is all because of the way you approach that moment with either blind reactive conditioning or skillful awareness that has worked through that problematic conditioning before the encounter with the person in question. This brings us to another important thing we have absolutely no control over, and that is the minds and hearts of other people. Yes, you can nag, badger, force, coerce, manipulate and con people, but that is just a recipe for more stress, anxiety and conflict. I'm talking about removing those negative things from your life. What we can do is invite, inspire and encourage people. But if you want to be free, stress and anxiety free, then you must set them free to follow whatever path they choose, even if you think they are going in the wrong way, even if they actually are going in the wrong way. That is their right, as it is your right. But then, there is actually no wrong path, because every path is going to teach you something, whether you want to learn that lesson or not. There are, of course, more optimal paths where peace, happiness, and fulfilling your potential are concerned, but that depends on whether you are willing to learn from all the experiences of going down all the wrong paths. Ultimately, we are trying to control other people because we are not taking control of our own fears and insecurities. So stress is ultimately caused by not knowing how to manage our own minds. So why do we react negatively in ways that are self-defeating? That leads us to the second factor to understanding stress. The second factor is fear and worth. In other words, being afraid of being regarded as unworthy. Now you may not immediately see how the fear of being unworthy has anything to do with stress, but in fact, deep down, it is the source of most, if not all, stress reactions and suffering in general. The need to be worthy can be tracked right back to being a very small child needing to be consistently seen, heard, felt, supported, accepted, loved unconditionally by our parents, or by any other significant person in our lives. When we are a small child, we are talking here of 5 or younger, we are so vulnerable and powerless, literally dependent on our carers for our very survival. Also, as that child, we are naturally without effective psychological defenses. We are so open and trusting because we need to depend on someone to survive. When we feel connected as a child, we love that person we are connected to with abandon. We just want to be one with them. What we, as that small child, is learning from all these interactions is our sense of self in the world, our own sense of value. Of course, we live in a world where our carers and our environment may not be what we need to feel loved and valued. Therefore, what is reflected back to us as we interact with our world with such openness, innocence, and vulnerability is shaping our beliefs of how lovable we are, how worthy we are, We don't understand it in that way as a small child. We don't have the capacity to think things through in that way at that age, and we don't yet have an independent enough sense of self to be able to validate our own self-worth. At that age, we are far more feeling than thinking. So what we experience when we don't get the love response that we instinctively need is emotional pain. We also assume that the adults in our lives must be right and we must be wrong, even when the adults are wrong, even when we try to rebel, because we need them so much. Therefore, because we are so vulnerable and dependent at that age, we unconsciously take that experience in as though the experience of not being loved must be our fault, which simply can't be true at that age, because it is the adult carer's total responsibility to be there for us when we are that young and vulnerable. But of course we have human beings as parents who may have their own emotional wounds and negative self-defeating conditioning that causes them to be closed, distracted, and stressed, therefore unable to unconditionally love us consistently enough in the ways that we need. Even when our parents are well-adjusted and consistently loving, environmental factors may impede that love bond, such as a chronic illness, natural disasters, the death of a parent, and so on. For a young child, too many uncared for negative emotional impacts trigger the child's primal fight-or-flight survival mind to begin building unconscious protective psychological barriers. As we grow older, we become less open and more defensive, and furthermore, we begin to anticipate negative reactions from those around us, to the point where we just expect it. And even when we encounter someone who is genuinely accepting and loving, we struggle to trust them. As a result, we come to have the same relationship with the future as with the past. We come to expect, to anticipate, to fear negative outcomes because that is part of fight or flight's role on a psychological level to try to preempt possible dangers that may be ahead of us. This preempting is a very important function. It helps us to be wary of real possible dangers by utilizing our memories and our imagination, prompting us to be appropriately cautious. Unfortunately, this protective function can become overly weaponized, and this overstimulates our fear-based imagination. As a result, we develop the habit of projecting a negative imaginary scenario onto future events that we know next to nothing about, without even realizing what we are doing. With anxiety, this habitual projecting becomes more acute and pervades into broader areas of our lives. We lose touch with actual reality. Instead, we are all too often frequently imposing our negative reality, our weaponized imagination, onto actual reality. As a result, when we think about a future event, we see problems, whereas the person next to us may see only opportunities, because their conditioning has been very different. Therefore, the person who sees only opportunities is going to have a very different relationship with each moment leading up to the same event. They will be living in a very different reality. This is how powerful we are. We literally have the power over our own reality and live in that reality. We have the power to create stress by expecting the worst, or we can create peace and happiness by accepting what is and working positively with it. So there are two stress-busting questions that you need to ask yourself on an ongoing basis whenever you are feeling stressed or anxious. 1. Do I truly know that to be true? And two, what am I really afraid of? In regards to the first question, you must learn to look squarely at what your mind is coming up with about the situation and sort the actual real facts from what your mind is imagining. Putting pen to paper is really helpful here. This helps to bring the mind's unconscious content, which is, more often than not, irrational, out into the light of day, where your awareness can objectively scrutinize it. The mind's unconscious content is so often irrational because it was accumulated when you were a child with a child's perceptions. This is the case for all of us. Then it is about focusing on the negative things that your mind is imagining and feeling into where these emotional vulnerabilities take you. It is there where you will inevitably come to see how your fear of rejection feeds most, if not all, of the negative imaginings. This is not your fault. This does not mean that you are stupid or something like that. It simply means you are human, with some emotional wounds that need to be compassionately, lovingly taken care of by you, you as the growing, maturing adult that you are now, reaching back to the vulnerable child that you were then, who is still living within your mind via your memories and conditioning. Also, it is essential to understand that your fight or flight self is not protecting you as the aware adult you are now. It is protecting you as the vulnerable child who is still alive in your memories. Your primal fight or flight self still thinks you are that child. The fight or flight is a part of the programs, the conditioning that built up within your mind over the course of your childhood. This small primal unconscious part of your mind is not even aware of the realities of now, even less so of the future. All it knows are the perceptions and experiences of you as a child. So this overly weaponized and limited survival dimension of your mind is reacting to the present realities of your life as if it is your past, and as though you are still that vulnerable child of your past. This is a very important reality of your mind that you need to come to terms with as part of learning to recondition your mind out of its stress reactions. There is a third factor that will help you overcome stress and anxiety, and that is being aware of your breathing and change the way you breathe in response to stress and anxiety. What has my breath got to do with this, you may ask? When we are under the influence of stress and anxiety, we tend to feel tight, wound up, and as a symptom of this, our breath becomes shallow, like we are in suspense, waiting for the bad things to happen. This shallow breathing is a symptom of being stuck on fight or flight mode. For one, it has been proven to be very not good for your health, so engaging in deep breathing exercises is always good, which is why it is so important in yoga and so many other fitness and well-being programs. Secondly, while you are breathing deeply and slowly, you are effectively disengaging your body from the fight-or-flight reaction. Breathing deeply and slowly will effectively pull you into the now moment and helps to free you from being so lost in some fear-based story about your future, etc. If you add this to consciously letting go of what you can't control and validating your fundamental worthiness on an ongoing basis, you are then also getting hold of the lever that will disengage your mind from the fight-or-flight reactions as well. you will in fact be practicing mindfulness, the most effective stress and anxiety busting process there is. I have produced two important podcasts that will specifically teach you much more about mindfulness. They are episode 4, Overcome Negative Self-Talk, and episode 6, Heart of Mindfulness, from my 5 Steps to Freedom podcast series. What you want to aim for is to make deeper, slower breathing your default breathing mode. So set yourself up ongoing reminders that prompt you to breathe deeply and slowly. And while you are doing this, you will also be remembering to be the aware parent of your mind in that moment. You will be taking better care of your health, and mindful breathing will also make you far more aware of when you start to tighten up from stress and anxiety. So now you have some tools for overcoming stress and anxiety, but you are still faced with dealing with your human mind that is so powerfully habit-bound. So knowing how to implement those tools in an effective and empowered way is the next part of the process. The next obvious question here is, how do I become that wise, compassionate parent to my human mind when my human mind keeps overpowering me? Well, that brings us back to the formula for effectively working with your mind that I mentioned earlier in this podcast. This formula is called the 5-step process for healing, wisdom, and empowerment. Steps 1 and 2 of the process show you how to step into the aware parent position to where you can observe your mind rather than be lost in your mind. This is how to become proficient in your practice of mindfulness. In other words, how to fill your habit-bound unconscious mind with informed awareness. So let's have a look at steps 1 and 2. Which are the foundation of the whole process. Starting with step 1. Step 1 is unconditional self-acceptance, and acceptance in general, but we'll focus on self-acceptance to begin with. Unconditional acceptance is what you needed as a child in order to grow up happy, secure, and fully functional. To the degree that you didn't experience being accepted and therefore loved unconditionally is the degree that fight or flight is in control of your life now. In other words, unconditional self-acceptance is the opposite of every habitual thought structure that causes you emotional pain now, that causes you to have fight or flight reactions, including stress and anxiety. When you commit to accepting yourself unconditionally, you will be able to increasingly gain awareness of how your mind is hurting itself with the confusions that have accumulated in your conditioning. Unconditional self-acceptance will reveal to you how you are judging yourself, putting yourself down, undermining yourself. You will come to know that your mind is attacking itself because unconditional self-acceptance feels so good compared to self-judgment, self-condemnation, which feels so bad. Also, while you are committed to accepting yourself unconditionally, you will increasingly see that the self-judgments are self-defeating and simply not true. Why? Because unconditional self-acceptance is unconditional. There are no conditions that you have to meet before you are loved, before you love yourself. You will accept yourself when you make mistakes, stuff up, lose your way, even if someone else rejects you, is mean to you, abandons you, and so on. You can't control how others accept you, but you can control how you accept yourself. There is nothing on this earth or anywhere else for that matter that is a reason for you to reject yourself. After all, this is the commitment an aware parent has for their child. This is the commitment that ensures that their child learns how to accept, honor, and respect themselves. This is the commitment that enables the child to feel positive and confident in their future. This is the commitment that gives the child the resilience, confidence, and awareness that inoculates them from stress and anxiety. Your mind is now your child, and you are your mind's accepting, compassionate, loving parent. Unconditional self-acceptance opens your heart to yourself, which is the same as activating your awareness. You as your observing self, your own increasingly aware parent, which is the basis of mindfulness, to be able to compassionately observe and mentor your own mind. As awareness, you have the power to learn a new way, to know that it feels right, way before your mind can possibly know, because your mind is stuck in habit. But you as awareness are always now, always adaptable, always in the position to learn something new. When you went to school, they weren't teaching your mind, they were teaching your awareness. It was up to you as awareness to teach your mind what you were learning by studying the subject. Understand that your mind is meant to be habitual. That is what enables us to walk and talk, etc., without having to think about it. However, the more primal level of the mind does not have the capacity to tell the difference between what is good for us and what is not. It just records what is repeated to it over an extended period of time or what has a significant emotional impact, which is why it is easier to learn things that we are excited about. It is at the level of awareness that we are able to tell the difference between what is good for us and what is not, because we can feel the difference as a part of looking squarely and objectively at the issue. When we are able to bring the unconscious content of our minds into our awareness by paying attention to how we feel, we can then identify where the mind is confused by the emotional pain that we are feeling, which is being caused by self-attacking, self-defeating thoughts. Therefore, with your growing awareness, you will be able to increasingly identify these self-attacking thoughts that are being triggered by the circumstances that you are encountering, while no longer identifying with these self-attacking thoughts. These self-attacking thoughts will be captured by your awareness instead of you, as awareness, being overpowered by your mind. You will come to know these painful thoughts are not true because they will contradict the truth that you are unconditionally worthy, that you have the right to be human. You get overpowered by your confused mind when you buy into the self-judgment. When you are able to stay steady in your growing belief and knowing that you are worthy no matter what, you won't be pulled into the negative thought, even as your mind continues to habitually think the negative thoughts. You will be able to observe them, feel them, identify them, but you won't be these negative thoughts, because as conscious awareness, you will be unconditional self-acceptance instead. So in terms of overcoming stress and anxiety, the more consistently you can stay centered in unconditional self-acceptance, the more positively you will be able to view the next moment, the positive possibilities of the future, because you won't be controlled by the very limited and confused and wounded perceptions and perspectives of your more primal fight-or-flight mind. So unconditional self-acceptance an essential quality of unconditional love, is of fundamental importance to healing, awakening, and transformation. And it works the same for everyone, even though everyone has to work it into their conscious awareness and mind differently, because we all have different characters and conditioning. But love is love. It is the source of life for the human mind. It is the fundamental foundation of your ultimate potential. Everyone who is resilient, consistently happy and peaceful, regardless of their circumstances and conditions, have their mind's conditioning aligned to unconditional self-acceptance as an indisputable truth. That is the lens that they look at life through. Many such people naturally have this alignment as a part of their positive conditioning. But then many others have learnt how to parent themselves to this effective level of awareness by committing themselves to a formula, a process, such as I am laying out for you here. I am one such person. In my late teens and early 20s, I was chronically and at times suicidally depressed, made worse by underlying PTSD, and very defensive and therefore reactive, seeing the world through a very negative, stress-laden lens. By committing to and working with this process in an open-ended way, I was able to dismantle my emotionally painful, confused, and self-defeating thought patterns layer by layer, increasing my ability to function with each breakthrough. For the last 30 years, I've been able to face and grow through life's challenges effectively, able to grow more aware and resilient by being able to effectively learn from each experience. I am my own best friend, guardian, and sanctuary, where once I was my own worst enemy. So here you are, learning about your mind and the craft of mastering your mind. So what is step two of the five-step process? This takes us back to when I was talking about how we all react differently to the same situation, that it is not the situation that causes our suffering, it is how our mind is dealing with the situation. Therefore, if you are blaming other people, places, and things for your suffering, on your stress and anxiety, you will not be able to awaken your awareness and gain mastery of your mind, because your peace and happiness will be in the control of other people and things outside yourself. Therefore, step two is total personal responsibility. Total personal responsibility for what? Everything you think, therefore feel, say, and do. Now, this is not about you should this or you shouldn't that. Like unconditional self-acceptance, it is a sincere, never-give-up commitment that then places you firmly on the path of learning how to master your mind. You cannot master your mind unless you are committed to fully owning your mind. It does not matter if you don't know how. It is about accepting where you are now and working with that. Each day you will be having a go at accepting total personal responsibility to accept yourself unconditionally and then learn something from the experience of having a go, no matter how crap you are at it at first. This is how anyone is able to effectively learn something. By working steps 1 and 2 into your daily life, getting it wrong just becomes an opportunity to learn more about how to inevitably get it right more often. It no longer means you have failed or that you are unworthy. When you fall back into those self-defeating beliefs, you get weighed down and feel defeated. Now you have an effective process to get back to, in order to reset your awareness to accepting yourself unconditionally, recommit to compassionately taking total ownership of your mind and restart your healing and awakening process again, over and over again, so you can reset, recommit, and restart your healing process. Your ultimate power is in never giving up, no matter how many times you get knocked down, because you know there is a way now, and you know how to make your daily experiences work for you. You are learning the fine craft of mind mastery. Of course, you are not going to be very good at it at first. That is how it is when we are first learning a complex task. You are unconditionally accepting your right to be human and to learn by trial and error. Total personal responsibility is your path to wisdom. It is you as the parent learning to take full responsibility to care for and mentor your own mind with unconditional self-acceptance. Therefore, steps 1 and 2 are twin steps, for they are like you as mother and father of your confused but learning and growing mind. Steps 1 and 2, self-acceptance and self-responsibility, represent the foundation of conscious awareness and guide you as you learn how to be your own loving, wise, and compassionate parent. In describing steps 1 and 2, I've already described much about steps 3 and 4. Step 3 is putting acceptance and personal responsibility into action when you face yourself, open your heart to yourself, parent and mentor yourself with love and compassion. Step 3 is let go and tune in. What are you letting go of? Judging and blaming yourself and others. We are all human. We are all caught up in our conditioning in our own unique ways. In so many ways, we are acting compulsively, not knowing how to act differently. While you are judging and blaming, you cannot access the power of your own conscious awareness that enables you to get above your reactive mind enough to start acting on your mind with awareness. Instead of reacting, you can set boundaries with others based on your self-care, based on the capacity of the other person's ability to participate in a constructive relationship or not. But you can do that without hating them or attacking them. You come to understand that judging others just feeds their fight or flight as well as yours. You will be learning to discern instead, which comes from having a more clear understanding of the situation before you and the capabilities of the people in that situation. You will have this discernment because you have come to know your own human self so well. You come to know yourself so well because you stop judging yourself. Unconditional self-acceptance and accepting others unconditionally is the lifeblood of any relationship. This is what makes a relationship work, whether those relationships are personal, work-related, community-based, or international relations. This approach to relationships is far more constructive and the boundaries are more often respected, and you are less inclined to have the other person continuing to clutter up your mind because you realize that you are the one who is holding them there with your judgments. By being able to let go of judging and blaming means you are increasingly understanding that the circumstances around you are triggering your emotional reactions, but are not the cause. You can then use those triggers as doorways that lead you to the confusions within your own mind that are the actual cause of the negative reaction. Here you can then tune into your mind and get on with being your own wise parent. That is why step 1, unconditional self-acceptance, is so essential. Committing to this step opens your heart and therefore your awareness and pulls you free of the primal, limited survival, fight-or-flight mind that cannot get beyond itself. It cannot get a perspective on itself. It cannot feel love and be love. Empowered by step one, unconditional acceptance, you are then in the position to be able to face yourself without being so dragged into the fight or flight mind. You can then increasingly learn how to stay open and present with your fears and insecurities, like a loving parent being there unconditionally for their vulnerable, upset, frightened child who first needs to feel your love in order to be open and receptive to you. Your mind, your human self, your inner child can't feel your love until you can feel and accept your inner child, until you are willing to stay open and present to your own vulnerabilities. It is the same when, as a child, you truly felt heard, accepted, cared for, just as you are, which enabled you to let go of your defenses and let the love in. It's the same for your relationship with your own mind. Stop judging yourself. Accept yourself as you are. However, this is not easy at first, because we are used to giving our love to others, but not to ourselves. Also, fight or flight is so quick at first that when you are triggered, it shuts you out before you know it. However, by maintaining your commitment to yourself, your feeling, your awareness, for that moment of vulnerability and reaction grows. Because you are doing your best to face it and own it with your heart open to yourself. Assisted and empowered by your deep, slow, mindful breathing. This is the tuning in part of step three and is the hardest part of the process to get used to and master, but it is where your transformation really occurs. It is where the power of self-mastery is accessed. It is where you will touch a potential within you that is literally the Holy Grail. In this Holy Grail moment, you will not just be trying to love yourself. You will experience yourself becoming love, being love, and feel your human mind melt into you like a child letting go into the arms of a loving parent, into you as the parent. This is where the emotional healing happens, even though the entrenched layers of mental conditioning may take a bit longer to dismantle and replace. This is where you must be patient and endlessly persistent with yourself. Please understand, you are not doing this to fix your vulnerable mind in order to make it go away. If you are doing that, which we all do at first, it is like pushing your hurt child out the door so you are no longer bothered by it. Your mind needs mentoring for sure, but most of all, your mind needs to feel your love, your acceptance, your unconditional love, your lifelong commitment to always be there for your vulnerable mind reactions. Now, don't get me wrong, it doesn't have to be perfect. Every little bit of connection you can make to yourself makes a difference, and it accumulates and we get more persistent with it. Your vulnerable reactive mind is not an inconvenience any more than your child is an inconvenience. Your child can't help being a child any more than you could help being a child. In the same way, your mind can't help being a mind caught in childhood conditioning. Your vulnerable mind reactions are always your opportunity to learn how to be the ultimate love for yourself with increasing power and wisdom. You are learning to lean into your vulnerabilities rather than push them away. You are learning to lean into them with your heart open through unconditional self-acceptance. You are learning to raise your mind into your potential to finish the job of raising the child within you. At first, though, it feels like you are facing a scary dragon, which is your fight or flight self. But as you persist, you increasingly realize the dragon is just hiding you as a small child who is lost and alone, and that it is your love that brings that child home, a home that is your awakening heart. It is essential to understand that your relationship with yourself is the foundation of your life and determines the quality of every aspect of your life, especially the ways you think about your future and conduct your relationships with others. Your relationship with yourself is the most important relationship you have. When doing your best to process your emotional reactions, at first the best you can do is return to that vulnerable, reactive, upsetting moment sometimes afterwards, once you regain some awareness. When you do, you can then reconnect your awareness to unconditional self-acceptance, empowered by your deep, slow breathing, which again enables you to more effectively sit with and feel into the vulnerabilities and reactions. You're also accepting the conditions around you, accepting the triggering that it causes. You're accepting, allowing, seeing that it leads you into your own confusion, so it's becoming a benefit. You're seeing the opportunities in each moment. As you are tuning in, you can write what you are thinking and feeling out in your journal, where you can compassionately look at your vulnerable mind's confusions objectively. It also helps to talk it through with someone who has some experience in the process and who is good at listening. This is an important part of learning to accept yourself. It actually does not matter how long after the event you do this. You can do the same work with any memory, no matter how long ago. But the aim is to gain the ability to be present and aware as close to the reactive moment as possible, and eventually be so aware of a particular reactive pattern that you can catch it mid-reaction, or before you even react. There will always be something that will catch you off guard, however, so you always have to accept that you are human and always need to be in the position of learning and growing. You must always be ready and willing to reset your awareness to accepting yourself unconditionally, recommit to compassionately taking total ownership of your mind, and restart your healing and awakening process once again, over and over again. Reset, recommit, and restart. Where stress and anxiety is concerned, you will be looking out for how your mind starts imagining a negative story when you think about something that you are trying to deal with. Back to, do I actually know that this is true? And get back to remembering that life is happening for you, not to you. That the future is an opportunity, not a problem. As your process continues to evolve, your ability to compassionately mentor your mind with your growing awareness will also evolve. The more you learn how to tune into, be present with, and process your vulnerabilities and emotional reactions, the more you will learn how to care for your mind. And as I pointed out, you will also become increasingly aware of how to set appropriate boundaries in relationships and manage the relationships that you have with more skill, understanding, love, and compassion. Understand that this process can be taken to great depths, so don't put limits on how far you can heal and grow. There is a lot more to be said about step 3, let go and tune in. To delve deeper into how to master step 3, go to podcast 4, Overcome Negative Self-Talk, and podcast 6, The Heart of Mindfulness, in my 5 Steps to Freedom series, and podcast 2, Overcome Trauma and PTSD, in this Quest for Healing series, in that order. So let's have a quick look at step 4. Step 4 is live in the now. So this is applying steps 1 and 2 into how you create and manage your life on a daily basis. Instead of scattering and burning up your energy and cluttering up your mind by trying to control things you have no control over, you are learning to process, to parent your mind with step 3, let go and tune in, and then use the clarity that you gain to focus on how to constructively manage your life now, every day. Step 4 is about consciously planning your day like you would for your own child, because your child is naturally going to get confused and distracted and caught up in emotional reactions. Here, using a journal and daily diary is essential. Your life is your business. Your profit is measured by how much peace and happiness and appropriate order you can produce. Remember how I said steps 1 and 2, acceptance and responsibility, are like being mother and father for your mind? Well, steps 3 and 4 is the same. In step 3, you are staying tuned into the vulnerable and emotional needs of your mind throughout the day, even noting in your diary particular fears and insecurities that you are currently working through to help yourself be more aware of when they get triggered. In step 3, you are actively nurturing yourself, holding your human self by the hand as you go about your day. With your step 4 work, on a daily basis, you are writing down jobs and goals in order to keep track of them, so that you can more consciously manage how to create your life. By doing this, you are also becoming more aware of the ways you procrastinate, get distracted, and lose motivation, which you then hand back to your step 3 work. Therefore, steps 3 and 4 work together as a team, and these steps are informed and empowered by steps 1 and 2. Therefore, by working the steps into your life, you are pulling your awareness free of your randomly conditioned, often childlike unconscious mind, and into your bigger, higher aware adult mind, where you do things because they actually work. And if they don't work, you can see the opportunity to learn something new. The child mind engages in what's called magical thinking. Because we do not have control of our own lives as a child, things just seem to happen magically, and due to our limited awareness, we made lots of assumptions about life and our worth that simply weren't true. And we carried those unconscious thinking habits into the ways we react to and manage our lives as an adult now, and then wonder why we end up in a state of stress and anxiety. So you use the 5-step process to awaken you into your power of awareness, from where you can be the wise and loving parent of your mind, continuing the process of growing your mind up to match your real potential. Step 5 is live the process as your way of life. In other words, never stop learning how to be the consciously aware parent to your mind, because your whole life depends on it. And so does the health and well-being of your body, because your body is living within your mind. Remember what stress and anxiety does to your body. Now your mind and body live within you as conscious awareness. You can become your own best friend, mentor, and sanctuary. So that concludes this episode. Please do yourself a favor and also listen to my Real Healing and Real Awakening podcast series and my 5 Steps to Freedom podcast series, and subscribe to my podcast channel to get easy access to all my podcasts, including new ones. Also, feel free to contact me if you have any questions or have any feedback. I am here for you, wherever you may be. And finally, a special thanks to Sacred Earth for giving me permission to feature their beautiful music on this podcast. I will be using their music exclusively from now on. You will find their website link within the blurb accompanying this podcast. Be your own forever loving and compassionate parent, and love will always warm your heart.